KTW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Severson. More reaction to the Supreme Court upholding a ban on guns for the people under domestic violence restraining orders. Outside the court, Reverend Patrick Mahoney, director of the Christian Defense Coalition.
When you look at the statistics of women who have been killed by their partners, of those who've had injunctions against them for domestic violence, the numbers are alarming. The Supreme Court made the right decision here.
Arkansas State Police have just identified the man wounded and arrested in today's deadly grocery store mass shooting in the small town of Fordyce. He's Travis Posey, 44, of New Edinburgh, Arkansas. Murder charges filed today against two men suspected of killing a 12-year-old Houston girl whose body was found in a creek after she disappeared during a walk. The two are Venezuelan nationals who entered the U.S. illegally in March, say customs officials. Wall Street indexes ended higher for the week. This is ABC News.
I'm Lisa Hale with WGBW News, your news roundup in quick podcast form. You can find it anywhere at the WGBW website, wgbw.fm.
Civic Media News, I'm Ella Saff. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Pear Marquette Park is out as the protest area for the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee next month. Instead, there are two demonstration areas, one near Pfizer Forum and another near the Baird Center. Secret Service Director Kimberly Cheadle.
I'd like to reassure everyone that the Secret Service and our public safety partners respect every American's First Amendment right to express themselves. The Milwaukee PD and other law enforcement partners are well equipped to manage protests and ensure gatherings remain safe for all individuals involved.
Republicans didn't want the protest zone so close to Pfizer Forum. The Department of Natural Resources is offering $100,000 in grants to rural Wisconsin counties that help recycle unwanted electronics. The funds would go towards building permanent electronics collection sites or hosting collection events. And that's what you need to know. I'm Ella Saff, and this is Civic Media News.
Every business faces challenges, but complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping shouldn't be one of them.
With USPS Ground Advantage from the United States Postal Service, you can avoid all the noise.
No more unexpected surcharges, hidden fees, or complex rate structures.
It's just easy, cost-effective, and dependable shipping. Tune your business's frequency to success and turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
The Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to. Lots to talk about. The other day on the program, I said something about messaging and how the Democrats don't have the platforms, don't spend the resources, the time, the energy, the money, just don't seem to be that interested in getting the message out. And as I said, the Hill piece I was quoted in, Democrats got a great message. They've got things to run on. There are good things happening. Nobody knows about it. Which is why the right has built the most powerful echo chamber in the history of humanity. Goebbels would be blushing. So when I saw this tweet that went out, where someone, Rogue Nordery is his handle, he says, it's infuriating how often I Google a story to verify it, and the results are, number one, New York Times, no free articles left. Fox News, always free. Number three, Washington Post, no free articles left. Number four, Breitbart, always free. Number five, Daily Caller, always free. And he says, look, guess what people end up reading when this happens? And absolutely spot on accurate, what I've been saying for a very long time. You've got to create an equal balance. There've got to be both sides of the coin. They've got to be so that citizens can go, here's one argument, here's the other, weigh them and take them through some critical thoughts, some filters, and go, well, this sounds like BS. This sounds logical. Let's go here. For instance, you know, the Republican Party keeps saying that they're the party of working people. Okay, let's take a look at that for a second. And you look at, you know, the difference between Trump and Biden. What did Trump do for working people? Well, he appointed Eugene Scalia as his Secretary of Labor, a corporate lawyer. Fought against working people. Hold on. And you look at someone like Joe Biden, who put Marty Walsh and now Julie Sue, people who've spent their lives fighting for working people. And look, we could go down the list of each administration and go, this is the person that they put in front of, in charge of OSHA, a corporate shill that Trump put in place. Biden has put someone who, I don't know, has actually been in a workplace that is dangerous and wants to make it safer. The woman who was the head of the wage and hour division during the Trump years, actually accused of wage theft. You know, what her job is to make sure doesn't happen. The woman who's in charge of it now, someone who fought employers stealing wages from workers. And this is where you go, how did we get here? How did we get to the world where too many working people are believing up is down and down is up and left is right and in front is back? How did we get here? Well, I think as this guy pointed out, you go to to do your own research, and what do you see? You see what the right wing has put out. You see the Fox News, the Breitbarts, the Daily Callers, the Newsmaxes, the OANs, the ACB, XYZ, the red this or that. There are tons of them, and they flood the zone with all of this, well, let's call it BS. Let's call it exactly what it is. They have their alternative facts, and they live in a world of alternative reality, and they create this. And they put it out into the webs. So we're, as this guy's saying, look, I want to know if something's true. So what do I see? I see all of these stories that seem very well coordinated. Seems like there's some magic hand behind it because they all look pretty much alike. And they all cross-promote and they all check each other. They live in their own little incestuous pool. This is what the right wing has done masterfully. You think about all the think tanks that are out there creating, well, bad ideas. And you've got this megaphone who's out there saying, bad is good. You know, this is Orwellian on its face. And yet, Democrats, the left, labor, they haven't figured it out. And I don't know that they're going to. And we get this every time because the reporter called me and said, you know, what do Democrats need to do to get their message out? And I said the same thing I always say. They need to invest in platforms. They need to have places where their people come and actually say things. They usually don't. And have a message that working people can hear. As I said, I think Democrats have a great message. I think what Biden has done is fabulous. It's just got to get more airtime, more coverage, more stories in places where people can go and read them and not have to dig into their pockets. That's the reality. And what have we done? None of it. Well, virtually none of it. And are we then surprised a story like that is happening in Lansing, Michigan right now? A state representative, a Republican state representative, a guy named Neil Frisky, evidently was grabbed up after allegedly chasing an adult dancer, a stripper, from his home with a gun. So the dancer who works at this gentleman's club, you know, close to Frisky's house, evidently somehow got into the house, and shots evidently fired because that was the call. And police have arrested Frisky, and he's being held in Lansing City Jail until the arraignment, which means had to be something serious. And what did we get from the campaign, and what was reported on? Well, the official statement from the campaign read, this morning, it was brought to our attention that Representative Frisky was arrested and being held As many of us know, Rep. Frisky is always exercising his Second Amendment right, especially on strippers. We do not have any details besides what the media has sourced. Oddly, before any of us knew anything, they said it's highly suspect considering the timing of this situation, right before absentee ballots are released, day after an unknown phone number conducted polling on the 107th race between Rep. Frisky and our opponent with deep state ties. We ask everyone for prayers and to stay tuned from updates directly from this campaign or Representative Frisky himself. Thank you for the outpouring of concern and unwavering support we have received this morning. Clearly, Rep. Frisky is over the target in this race. What? And the news media reported on this like it was actually possible that the opponent, a deep stater, did all this. He was just exercising his Second Amendment. Chasing the stripper from the house? I don't know. But as I was reading through the article, the both sidesism, you know, this is the response. And without a blush, mind you. This again is why we need to have, well, better media. Now I look at this statement and go, how it should have been reported is, wow, this campaign, I guess this is it. I guess this is what damage control looks like when you have nothing left. And sadly, we've normalized this. In the era of Trump, what do we get? We get alternative realities, alternative facts, and craziness. And we get people who are chasing strippers out of their house with a gun in public office and not resigning, going to run for election. And the weird thing is, as screwed up as we are, he may win. Because now this is on my radar. I now have to see just how far we have fallen. But for me, the fact that we have such a broken system, this is where we go, maybe we do need to do some investments in infrastructure. So Democrats, labor, lefties, start building something. Gonna help. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So on Tuesday, the Department of the Treasury and the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service, published their final rules on the IRAs, the Inflation Reduction Acts, prevailing wage, and their apprenticeship requirements. As I said yesterday on the program, this is the meat and potatoes of what is in these bills. It's making jobs for working people and making them good jobs. That's the part. Look, we can have all kinds of jobs. They pay a buck an hour. I don't know if they're helpful. This kind of stuff ensures that wages get into workers' pockets, helps their families, helps their communities, all good stuff, and here to share some thoughts on what this is, what it could do, and who's suing to stop it. I've asked Katie Harris to come talk with us. She's the Vice President of Federal Affairs there at the Blue-Green Alliance. BlueGreenAlliance.org, the website. Katie, thanks for taking time for us.
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
So as I said, you know, this seems to be, some people say kind of boring, but I'm like, this is the meat and potatoes of this legislation. This is the heart of what's going to make people's lives better and our communities better. So by ensuring that the jobs created out of this are going to be good jobs, it's exciting to me.
You're absolutely right. I mean, usually when people think of tax credits, their eyes glaze over and they have a really hard time paying attention. but you're right. I mean, this is really the central and I think even for BGA, the most important thing that we worked on in the Inflation Reduction Act, because as you said, it's actually creating good paying union jobs. There's actual provisions that do that, and it creates the pathways into those. So it's doing like the two best things you could want for creating good jobs in a clean energy economy.
Yeah, I mean, we could go through all of the production tax credit or the advanced energy project credit or the investment tax credit or the efficient commercial buildings thing or any of those things, and people would glaze over. But understand, when we do this stuff, it's incentivizing the kind of behavior that we want. We want clean energy. We want to get off the dirty stuff. We want to move in a better direction. And this is incentivizing it, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, we've had, you know, tax credits for clean energy since the early 90s. But it wasn't until the IRA was passed in 2022 that we had prevailing wage and apprenticeship attached to those incentives. So for the next 8 years now until 2032, we've got those. It's going to be great. It's going to create a lot of jobs.
For those who don't know what prevailing wage is, can you walk us through a little bit about what that is? And then the registered apprenticeship programs, explain what those are.
Absolutely. Yeah. So prevailing wage in its simplest form is the Department of Labor, and they're doing this hand in hand with Treasury. Department of Labor says, we think that this is the prevailing wage, it's kind of in the name, for this particular type of job and in this particular place. So it's based on the type of job and the place. And they do a survey across the country by county, and they say, here's what you should be paying. So you can think of it as a wage floor. There's nothing that says you can't pay higher if you're a developer, but it's the wage floor. And then the apprenticeship, that's really an earn as you learn kind of situation. So you don't have to go out and get a bachelor's degree. You literally can go get into an apprentice program. You're on the job, you're learning as you earn. And then at the end of it, you know, you've already got 4 years of experience. And it's a real opportunity for folks who might not have been able to get that 4-year degree. It's great, right? Like it's creating the pathway into the job too.
Yeah, I mean, on the prevailing wage front, you know, the idea that we're going to set the floor and say, look, these are the wages that are most frequently paid in these areas for these jobs. We're going to ensure that that wage doesn't drop through the bottom, that we have bottom feeders, transient contractors coming in and destroying the local building trades. We want to maintain that. But we also want these projects to have workers who have disposable income that they then spend in the community. There have been numerous studies done over the years that prevailing wage has a net positive effect, not in just what they're building, but in the local economy by those dollars then reverberating through the economy. So it's a double bang for your buck.
That's exactly right.
The apprenticeship program, they talked about the final rules on registered apprenticeship programs. I know my ABC friends, the non-union building trades folks, they like to tout that they've got building trades too. They've got apprenticeship programs too. I don't quite know. I know a lot of people don't finish those, and it seems to me it's just a way to get cheap labor in. What the parameters are for these programs? Because I know my union brothers and sisters, their apprenticeship programs are second to none. High graduation rates, jobs at the end, and not just cheap labor.
Yeah, exactly. So I think the distinction between an apprenticeship and a registered apprenticeship is key here. And in order to take advantage of the tax credit, it has to be a registered apprenticeship. And what that means is you have to go and register your program with the U.S. Department of Labor, or in some cases, it's with state departments of labor. But the North America Building Trades Unions, they have a list of all of those programs. You go to their website, you can click on it, you can find those. as does the U.S. Department of Labor. So if you're looking for apprentices and you're looking for a registered apprenticeship program, we've got good lists out there for you.
No, that's great. And the reason I bring both of these up, and I think they're so important, the difference between the union side of things and the non-union side is, the prevailing wage, they often say, well, that's the union wage. And the reality is Davis-Bacon is all about the most prevalent wage, the wage most often paid in an area when they survey. And the reason that they assume it's the union wage is because unions are proud of the wages that they earn. They're willing to come out and say, this is what we earn. Whereas some of our non-union contractors, well, they don't want you to know how little they're paying their workers, so they don't report it. And the apprenticeship program, same thing. They've got them. They just don't seem to cut muster. So for me, the fact that these are now in law and there are people who are looking into this, I think it's good stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I've been looking, but I'm not 100% sure, and I wanted to get your thoughts. Are project labor agreements part of this as well?
They are. So the way that Treasury and the Department of Labor are handling it is they're saying, if you are a clean energy project developer and you're party to a project labor agreement, that's not going to, automatically say you don't have to pay prevailing wage and use registered apprentices. Oftentimes project labor agreements will include those as well. But it essentially says, if you use a project labor agreement, then you don't have to pay a penalty if you mess up in the same way that you might if you're a clean energy developer and you don't keep the right records, you don't quite pay prevailing wage. They basically say, if you've got a PLA in place, then we'll come to you and say, you still need to fix it, you still need to pay your workers, but we're not going to make you pay the penalty to the Treasury that you would otherwise. And of course, there's some other great things that could go into a PLA too. So it's not a requirement, but it's definitely a nice nudge from Treasury and DOL saying, you should really think about using a PLA. It's good. It's a good idea, clean energy developers.
No, the reality is most PLAs have some kind of mechanism to ensure that if you're getting cheated out of wages, that you can rectify that, which is why I think you're not seeing the fines and the kind of things that you're talking about. Whereas, folks who aren't using them, they're generally the ones who are trying to cheat around the edges. But for me, I look at the Tale of Two Bridges, and I use this all the time. The bridge that was built in New York, the Tappan Zee, or with the replacement for the Tappan Zee, done under a project labor agreement with all union labor, done on time, under budget. And then you got that monstrosity in California. The Bay Bridge? I don't think it's ever going to get done, and ballooned way beyond the budget they had for it, not done with a project labor agreement. In fact, use cheap Chinese labor to come put the Chinese steel into place. So for me, it seems one is probably better for taxpayers than the other, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, PLAs are great. They provide certainty for the taxpayer, right? Return for the taxpayer, for the workers. It's great for the workers. They know what they're getting into. They've got protections. And if you're the developer, you know what you're doing as well. So it's just like everything is above board and you've got great protections for the workers.
So why doesn't this get as much attention as I think it should? Because this really is about making better lives. This is really about using our tax dollars in a way to get us the things that we need. Whether it's infrastructure, whether it's green energy, whether it's any of this stuff, and then create the environment for workers to have better wages, hours, conditions, and communities to have better tax base, all that stuff. This, to me, again, it plays into this snowball of positivity. Why don't we see more reported on this in the mainstream corporate-controlled media?
Well, part of it is this provision is a little bit newer. So if you went back to early 2023, it wasn't really finalized yet. So this is something that's been really strengthened in the final guidance, right? And then the other piece of it is it's not necessarily something that big corporations want to do. It's something that's great for workers. But I think, we can make the case to them. They should think about it, right? It's good for them, too.
No, I mean, the positive aspects of this are numerous. It's just amazing to me we don't get to see more of it. So when my red hat friends come and say, what has Joe Biden done? I go, this is pretty important. Even my blue hat friends, because I keep saying, you know, at some point we got to take the red hats and the blue hats off and put on a hard hat. There's a lot of work that needs to be done, and that work should be done with a project labor agreement with prevailing wage and registered apprenticeship programs. And where's that stupid little sticker that they were putting on gas pumps for a while going, you know, Joe Biden did that? Joe Biden did this. I guess that's the right response. I do.
It is. You did it.
Yeah. No, I mean, it is what it is. But, you know, out of this comes a lot of jobs. And I noticed this past week, you said the plant in Lordstown, Ohio, that Donald Trump told workers, don't leave because GM's not closing, that closed. The people who are making the batteries at, what is it, Ultimum Cells? Their workers just reached a historic agreement projected to help 1,600 workers who hopefully stayed around and are going to benefit from those jobs. This is kind of what I'm talking about. It's this, as we're moving to new technologies, as we're moving in a positive direction, we're getting good jobs out of it.
Yeah, exactly. And if you look at, you know, some of the numbers that have come out already from the IRS and Treasury, they've got a nice storytelling kind of profile. Something like 300,000 jobs have already been created through the tax credits that we're talking about today. And then there's projections that just from the tax credits, and there's a whole bunch of other stuff in the Inflation Reduction Act, something like 1.5 million jobs just from the tax credits. I think it's like 8.5 million jobs over the 10 years for the full Inflation Reduction Act. It's a lot.
Yeah, and when you're talking about tax credits, You're not talking about, you know, we're giving these people money. They're spending money and getting a deduction for this down the road. So they're investing in this new technology. This isn't all tax dollars, right?
Right, exactly.
Because, you know, I keep hearing people say, well, you know, Joe Biden's just handing out all this money. And look, you know, there are some incentives. And I'm a big fan of incentivizing behavior that we want and not incentivizing behavior that we don't want. This seems to be, to me, a step in the right direction. Not big enough, nowhere near chunky enough, in my view. I think we should have been doing much more. I think we must do much more. But this is pretty much a good start, I think.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to talk incentives, that's exactly what the prevailing wage and the registered apprenticeships are. It's leaving a lot of money on the table if you don't use both of those incentives. It's 30% back if you use prevailing wage and apprenticeships, and it's only 6% if you decide you're not going to do that. So if you've got a $100 million project and you're a clean energy developer, we're talking $6 million to $30 million. That's just a massive amount of incentive.
So let me ask you this, because, you know, I keep talking about these things, you know, that you've mentioned, that all this building's going on, all this investment's happening, and yet, you know, I talk to people every day who go, I'm not seeing it. It hasn't filtered down to where the average person, at least I don't think, in my experience of talking with people, it hasn't filtered down. Is that a failure of the administration to message? Is that our corporate controlled media not sharing? Any thoughts?
I think, you know, it's hard when you're an average person and you hear something like the Inflation Reduction Act, right? You might not know exactly what that is or what it means for you. I think it's down to folks like you and me having conversations, right? And getting it out there and saying, hey, like, look at this. Look at these tax credits. Look at the prevailing wage and apprenticeship requirements. And let's talk about what that's going to do for you.
And what kind of projects are we talking about? Because, you know, I've talked about battery plants like this one in Youngstown. That's in the Lordstown plant just outside of Youngstown. There are, you know, battery plants going up in Wisconsin and Michigan. What don't we know?
Well, for the type of projects, gosh, like you said at the beginning, there's a whole bunch of different tax credits that this can apply to. But generally speaking, when you're talking the prevailing wage and registered apprenticeship, we're talking the investment tax credit. So that's if you're going to build, say, a solar farm or a wind farm, something like that, and other things, or if you're going to produce the energy. So once you got it built and you're actually making the electricity, there's other requirements and some of the prevailing wage and apprenticeships actually attach to other things, but generally it's like the building and deployment of clean energy.
Yeah. And this whole thing is kind of like you're in your wheelhouse, isn't it? I mean, the whole idea of the Blue-Green Alliance is, you know, blue-collar workers building the next generation of green energy. This is kind of like right in the wheelhouse, isn't it?
No, exactly. I mean, there's a reason this was one of our top priorities when we were trying to get the bill, you know, through the Senate and through the House. This is really just, it's the bread and butter, right? It's key. It's how you really make careers come to fruition and you actually pay people a good wage and, you know, hopefully get them into a union and then also build the clean economy and do it all at the same time.
Katie Harris says bread and butter. I say meat and potatoes. Sounds like a whole meal to me. But Katie, I appreciate you taking some time for us, sharing your expertise and your thoughts. Keep up the great work.
All right. Thanks, Rick.
Katie Harris, VP of Federal Affairs there at the Blue-Green Alliance. Check out their website, bluegreenalliance.org. We'll get links out on social media. How you can take a look at that. Want to hear your thoughts. Are you seeing these projects? Seeing anything popping up? Or do you have one of these jobs? I'd love to hear it. Rick at thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, home for Matt Nair on Air.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, showers and some thunderstorms. We'll see a low around 64. Some heavy rainfall is possible. Heavy rain is possible on Saturday with showers and thunderstorms and a high near 77. For Saturday night, mostly cloudy, chance of thunderstorms and a low of 63.
It's 64 at our studios.
The big winners are in for the Scotty Summer Contest.
Exciting. Let's listen to the calls.
Hi, who's this?
It's Tori.
You're one of our grand prize winners.
All right, man. Great to hear this morning.
We got some good news for you.
Okay.
You are one of our grand prize winners.
Really?
Yes.
Awesome. Winning is fun. Just ask Tammy from Baraboo and Tori from Kiwani.
Thank you. That's great.
Listen for future chances to text and win on your local Civic Media radio station and the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So Jesse sent me an email. She said, Rick, love your statement that the Ten Commandments are Donald Trump's to-do list and should not be viewed as a checklist. I did say that. She says, my question is, will this open the door for other religions to post their edicts? And my mind went to, what else could we post? I know Islam has something like the five pillars. Buddhism has the noble eightfold path. I started thinking about Pastafarians. Do they have something? I went looking. I found a 12-step chart to using a colander. I guess we could post that. Might be good in the home economics place. So the question is, you know, Is she right? Is this opened up the other doors? She also asked the question, how can these so-called Christians support someone like Donald Trump? And my answer is blindly. That simple. And then look, you know, the reality is I don't think you're going to see any other religions text posted anywhere because these people can't remember their own 10. What makes you think they're going to remember something from another religion? Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the week, our good friend Sarah Burris, reporter at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. So thoughts on the Ten Commandments being plastered in every public school in Louisiana?
If I could give anything, it would be to put the Constitution in every classroom. Because I feel like, you know, everybody should know that. And yet here we are. Donald Trump is very, ignorant, selective about his amendments. And if we could have anything in the classrooms, it'd be nice to have the Constitution. Or school lunches would be great.
School lunches
everybody
would be good.
Because it turns out you can't eat the Ten Commandments. I mean, I'm sure you probably could, but yeah.
Maybe make them out of chocolate then.
There you go.
Now, my problem with this is, and look, I'm not against, you know, people, you know, learning the Ten Commandments. I wish more people would follow, it's decent advice. Don't kill anyone. Don't steal. Don't rape and pillage. You know, that kind of stuff. Don't lie. There's some good things. But I've always had this thought that the people who demand that it be plastered everywhere are the people who, one, don't know them and need them, and two, need them plastered everywhere as a reminder to be a decent human being. This is why I like atheists so much. I like atheists because they're not afraid of what comes after, and they're decent people now without the fear of hell and damnation. I find that interesting.
Humanism. I love humanism because it's the same sort of philosophy of be excellent to each other, right? It's the like Bill and Ted philosophy of just be excellent to each other because we're humans and we should do that for each other. I heard somebody who was talking about growing up in California and having a religion class where they in a public school, in a high school, where they were talking about all of the religions and how their texts influence society, and it was in a way that was more I don't want to necessarily say secular, but
more academic, casual. More as a study of religion. And I'm okay with that. I think you should know about other religions, including your own. I mean, I think that's probably not a bad thing. But if you're going to practice the faith, I believe that's something you do at home. You take your kids to church. If you want them to pray every day, maybe you get up a couple minutes before school, maybe before they go to bed, something like that. But I don't think it belongs in school. They got enough to do already.
Man, my favorite thing was in college. I took Eastern religions and Western religions in the same semester. So
why?
I learned a lot. It seemed like a good idea. I was like, well, this is going to be really comparative. And then I could sort of write, like, my papers can be, I could compare the different philosophies and then turn in the same paper for each professor. Like, it seems like a really good idea.
And how'd that work out for you?
Yeah, that's not how it worked at all.
No, but I mean, for me, I look at this and it's the people who are demanding that it be everywhere. They're the ones who use it as a checklist and not as the thou shalt not. It's more of, hey, this sounds like a good idea. It's kind of like 1984. I read it as a cautionary tale. Some read it as a how-to book.
And if you've seen the Lincoln Project just released an ad where they walked through all of the commandments that Trump has broken. I mean, it was pretty good. Like, it was a decent list. And they showed every example from the whole, like, you know, the adultery thing and showing Stormy Daniels and, all of the above, coveting and greed and get me started on.
It's not hard.
And the thing that whenever they talked about don't kill people, they showed the clip of him, you know, pointing to the camera and saying, I could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue.
Now the question
it was
then,
really the question, it was poignant.
No, it is, and look, I can see the video in my head without actually seeing it because as I was reading this story, my mind keeps going back to all of my friends who know all this stuff. The Lincoln Project's not telling anyone anything that we don't already know,
right?
And yet, in 2016, I had the religious folk telling me, well, God sends us, the vessel that we need, not the one that we want. And he may be imperfect, but he's still our guy. And we now see there was another person who was convicted in a sham trial. So now they're comparing him to Jesus, to Jesus. So it's weird to me when people know all this stuff, when reality is well known, well established, and yet still in denial.
I think that there is so much in non-denominational Christianity where people are left in these mega churches with pastors who are giving their interpretation and not the reality. A lot of the old school churches require specific passages, like having conversations about specific passages, like there's a Bible study course, like all of the things. And so it's really surprising that honestly that some of those still exist, frankly, the ones that teach the actual Bible, because it seems like you can manipulate people a lot better if you're giving your interpretation of what it says rather than what it actually says.
It's religious entertainment is what it's turned into. And sadly, I'm actually frustrated talking about it altogether, because the sad thing is good is losing. And you know, look, religion is supposed to be that thing that brings us together, that makes us want to be better. And yet it seems like, you know, the side that's pushing this doesn't really care about bringing people together or making us better. It's about shoving their belief structure down our throats and putting blinders on us to all of the craziness that's going on.
Interestingly, that kind of religion is forcing a lot of people away from it. And so to me, it's interesting because it seems like the evil side of Christianity, whenever you're trying to impose beliefs on somebody that are driving people away from the religion, that to me seems like a scam that, you know, is a little bit, you know, from the southern place.
Well, they're not poor. You know, I look at some of these preachers on TV. They are definitely not poor. I got to get some of your thoughts on the weekend Trump. I happened to see that Michael Cohen's, a friend of yours, Michael Cohen's former lawyer, is trying to get Biden to pardon Donald Trump. Do you think that's a good idea on the federal stuff? Do you think it's a good idea for him to go, yeah, let's pardon Trump? I think it's not possible, because I think Trump would have to go through the allocution process and accept responsibility, if I remember that being the way it goes. But do you think the overture would be well received?
Well, there's also the matter that it's a state charge. So Biden can't pardon Trump for this. He can't commute the sentence. He can only ask that the governor of the state of New York do it, which, I mean, I think the way that Lanny Davis talked about this was, you know, this seems like a way of bringing everybody together. And it was very, it was looking at it through the lens of the Nixon Ford thing. And it's like, dude, this is different when you have, one, you have a president who stepped down and is not running again. Pardoning Donald Trump while he's running for president just seems maybe not like the best idea. At the same time, I think one of the biggest problems that we have with the presidency and Donald Trump's willingness to break the law is there were no consequences for Richard Nixon. He was given a pardon and got away with it, with everything that he did. And I wonder if that had not happened, if there would be more of a disincentive, like Trump would believe, I might end up in the clink if I do this.
It might be possible.
At the same time, the other thing that really that he wrote is this idea of bringing people together just seems absurd, because it's like, if you think that pardoning Donald Trump is going to change a single vote from Donald Trump to Joe Biden, you have no business being in professional politics. And the second part of that is it will de-incentivize, I think, Joe Biden's followers who hate Donald Trump. Those people will be so discouraged and annoyed by everything that they're going to be less likely to vote. They're going to be less likely to volunteer, and they sure don't want to, you know, give any money to him. So it's like, I don't understand what he is seeing the win here is. Perhaps if Biden gets reelected, if he wants to do something nice, like commute Trump's sentence after he spent like a couple of months, you know, in the pen, that would be something very nice he could do. But again, like, this just seems, it is living in a fantasy world of politics that no longer exists.
Yeah, frankly. No, I mean, I don't think it's possible, and I don't think Trump would accept it, because I think with Trump's base, anything that happens to him is going to be a badge of honor. Much like, you know, Steve Bannon. Yeah. Steve Bannon's about ready to go to jail here in a couple of days. He's got a report for his, I think, 4 months that he's got to spend in prison. And, you know, they've got people going, look, this is, Bannon's going to come out a beast when he gets out of prison, because it's going to give him that street cred of, hey, look what I did.
You know, here's the thing. It's Danbury minimum security prison.
Still jail,
I mean,
man.
It's not, right. I mean, it's still jail. It's definitely still jail. The thing is like, one of the things I wrote about was Peter Strzok found the list at the commissary of all of the things that you can buy. And they're all of these hygiene products. And so everybody's like, geez, Wouldn't it be nice if Steve Bannon like went in there and was able to like get a good shave and like, you know, wash his hair, get a good decent haircut and really come out looking like he had a shower sometime in the last decade. Or maybe, you know, get some good gym time in and work out on that, you know, that six pack that's underneath the inflatable tire.
I got nothing to say there.
Right. I know. Like, we can't really be talking. But yeah, like the idea of Steve Bannon just pretending like he has any kind of credibility for a minimum security prison, I'm just going to be like, yeah, no. This was the inspiration. This prison was the inspiration for Orange is the New Black. So there you go.
Okay, well, I guess Steve Bannon can start selling dirty underwear, I guess, to somebody.
Yes.
That ain't right. That is not an image I did not want that. Thanks for that.
That's a different kind of fundraiser.
Yeah, different kind of fundraiser. But you know, here's the thing. You know, Trump's got an interesting couple of days coming up because the Supreme Court eventually has to decide on this immunity case, right?
Yes. So, I mean, honestly, what all of the legal nerds have been saying is, I don't understand how on earth the Supreme Court could ever find in his favor. Because if that happens, then I say Biden, you know, dispatches Steel Seam 6 to start, you know, doing whatever the hell he wants.
Yeah.
We know Biden would never do that because he's a traditionalist and a lover of the judiciary and all of the above. But seriously, and I think what I've heard from folks who are way smarter than me is that they will probably do a cop out. Either they're going to send it back to the judge to basically, you know, figure out what things apply and what things don't.
Right.
Or they will do something that, can you hear my cat screaming? She has demands. She has opinions about this.
Maybe the cat's angry about the Supreme Court not coming out with his opinion.
Dude, that's the thing too. It's like, this has been going on forever and ever. And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago where it's like, he basically has already won this case, you know, where he, because of the delay, this is never going to move forward. I think Judge Chutkin said something like 80 days, a minimum of 80 days it would take to go through all of the motions and everything else that's been on hold because of this case going to the Supreme Court. So, you know, it's just not, he's already won this thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no. And you knew this was going to happen. I talked to a number of lawyers who said this is never going to get to, it's never going to get to trial before the election. The best cases you got were the one in Manhattan. That was it. You know, I look at this alien cannon and then the craziness that's been going on there. Can you explain what's going on there?
Okay. So this is the weirdest story I've ever heard. And I feel like I've read a lot of alien stuff. So essentially what happened is Judge Cannon was assigned to this case because it's a fluke thing, right? It's a roll of the dice where the way that these kinds of trials are assigned. So she gets assigned to this case with Donald Trump. And this is after she's already sort of stepped in and screwed up with appointing a special master to see whether or not the search was done correctly. And that ultimately got overturned by the 11th Circuit. So two judges came to Cannon separately, one of them like a lower court judge saying, you know, maybe you should consider throwing this to Miami because there's a security issue and you're going to have a secure facility to be able to view a lot of these documents. And you don't have one. So it means taxpayers are going to have to build one. And that's just, you know, not a nice thing to force taxpayers to do.
Right.
The other one, after Cannon basically just said, you know, screw you, I'm doing whatever I want, the chief judge of her court came to her and said, you know, given the fact that you got slapped down pretty hard by the 11th Circuit, maybe you should not be doing this case. And Cannon said, you know, again, screw you, I'm doing whatever the hell I want. And so this idea of Judge Cannon having, you know, some questionable rulings and behavior and delays I think those are the kinds of things that folks look to as a great reason to go to the 11th Circuit and say, you know, she's doing this intentionally. She's doing it in favor of Donald Trump and because she has a bias against the government. Now, I feel like you have two judges who can also come forward and be like, look, we tried to tell her that this was a bad idea. We don't think that it's a good idea that she is doing this. We made it pretty clear. And I don't know if they consider that, you know, like as serious as I feel like it is. But you would think from judge to judge, right, that that would be something that they would think about. Another piece of this, I will say, is these are some of the top judges in the country, and they're leaking this to the press. So it has to be really major for them to want to do that, yeah. Right? Like this has to be a big deal to them for them to want to just call up the New York Times and be like, let me tell you what I did.
No, I mean, I think we knew she was in the bag from the beginning, and that concerns me. I want a fair and impartial judge to be in that on that position, and not just because it's Trump or not because it's political, but I think the system needs it, and yeah. And I fear we've politicized this to the point to where who knows? We'll see where it takes us. Finally, I got to get your thoughts on the big debate coming up. So I read that Biden is doing some debate prep by having staffers yell at him.
I totally made that up. That's not true.
Okay. I'm just going, wait a second. Is that because I can see it. I think that's good practice.
Right?
I think it's actually probably pretty smart.
I always tweet things that I think are jokes, and sometimes people believe them, and I'm like, how can you believe that?
No, I can believe that because if I'm preparing him, I'm preparing him to get knocked off of his thought every time he opens his mouth, because this is what the right does masterfully. You start a sentence and they immediately interrupt and they, I'm sorry. Did I interrupt you? And you've now been knocked off of your statement, and it gets annoying. Yes. But if they can keep you off of the flow, I got to tell you, I think that's an advantage.
I think the difficulty will be that, you know, they're cutting the microphones off and everything, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we won't hear Trump screaming.
Right.
Right. He's just going to talk louder. He's just going to be much, much louder. And so there is something to the idea that if I were preparing Joe Biden, I would be trying to talk at him at the same time that he's trying to talk about complex policy initiatives, because that would be, you know, the best way to train for it.
Yeah.
I would say too, the other thing that he should do is think about yelling shark every once in a while, because that could really throw Trump off of his game.
Shark.
Yeah. Because Trump is really scared of sharks.
Yeah.
So
and windmills. So.
Yeah. It's just a thought.
It is a thought. And that's where we will end on shark. Sarah, great talk with you. I appreciate the time.
Thank you so much. Have a good week.
Our good friend Sarah Burris. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1877. That was the day that 10 Irish miners were hung in Pennsylvania. They were part of a group of 20 who had been sentenced to death for allegedly being part of the Molly Maguires, a group of alleged radical Irish miners. Miners were on strike in the Schuylkill County anthracite coal region. The Mollies were accused of perpetrating violence and murder against the mine owners. Newspapers helped to rile up anger against the striking Irish miners. A Pinkerton detective infiltrated the group, and his testimony doomed those he accused to the gallows. Since the hangings, many have questioned his testimony and the cases made against the miners. But at the time, many newspapers celebrated the hangings. On the day of the executions, the New York Tribune called the men, quote, the wild beasts of the collieries of eastern Pennsylvania. The Carbon Advocate Advocate of Lehighton, Pennsylvania, declared the majesty of the law has been vindicated. The community breathes more freely now that these men who feared neither the laws of God or man have met their doom. The day has gone down in labor history as the Day of the Rope, or Black Thursday. The message of the hanging was meant to be sent to all who would dare stand up against the mine owners. In 1979, the governor of Pennsylvania posthumously pardoned John Blackjack Kehoe, one of the alleged leaders of the Molly.
Down the mines, no sunlight shines, those pits, they're black as hell. In mud and slime, they do their time. It's Paddy's prison cell. And they curse the day they travel.
Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, rick at thericksmithshow.com. Figures, the big debate coming up next week. We are going to miss the big debate. I will watch it, absolutely. We'll be commenting it on social media, but off for a week on vacation. Of course, that is how it works out, that we're going to be away and the big debate. But I think we know what's going to happen. I think we're going to... see Donald Trump attempt to bully Biden, attempt to shout him down, to talk over him. And look, you know, as Sarah Burris said a moment ago, and jokingly, I threw that out at her because I knew she threw that out, that someone would pick it up. If I'm Biden's handlers, I'm having people scream at him while he's making his point, because that's what the right has always been masterful at. I did see a Frank Luntz quote. Who I think is, you know, one of the geniuses of the focus group tested think tank approved world, the simplistic messaging that comes out of this guy. And he says, look, I'm watching the independent vote. He said, I don't believe they're swinging back and forth between Trump and Biden. I think they decided that they hate both candidates. They hate both parties, and they're voting out of anger, out of desperation, out of resentment. That this is where our political system has gotten. So be very careful how you analyze what goes on from now through the debates, through the election. It's his view that there could be a hidden anger vote that surprises everyone on election day. And you go, hidden? Look, everyone's angry. We've been fed a steady diet of outrage by the mainstream corporate-controlled media for the last 50 years. It's ramped up as we've come out of the pandemic. It's ramped up as inflation has hit. And it's ramped up as, you know, as people are struggling. Now, understand, people were struggling before. What's different now? Well, what's different now is the vitriol that's coming out of our elected leaders is raising that up. It used to be they tried to tap down that anger. Now they're part of it. And will there be an anger vote? Sure. Absolutely. And will the independents matter? Absolutely. I say all the time that our elections unfortunately come down to about 5% of the population, maybe 7, I've heard. They are the least informed, least active, least engaged. They're not paying attention right now. But they're the ones who decide the outcomes. And it's a handful of voters in a handful of states, because that's how things have gotten us to. So the question becomes, what are we going to see in November? I keep saying, if we can get working people on the same page, understand that we've got more in common than we have that divides us, that we all want just about the same thing, and that looking at the records of the two guys that are running, Joe Biden is easily, hands down, without question, unequivocally the best qualified, best candidate for the job. That's my view. I want to hear yours, though. Email me, rick at thericksmithshow.com. If you think I'm crazy, I want to hear it, because I think we need to have this discussion. And how do you get past that anger? How do we use the political parties to get the things that we need? As I've been saying the last several days, this administration's done some great stuff. And we're going to continue to talk about the stuff that they've done because it's important. It's important to say this is what got done as opposed to, hey, here's something that makes us mad. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. Freespeech.org for the video. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.